Hey everyone, it's Jonathan, and welcome back to Every Version Ever. Today we're talking about the 2003 version of Peter Pan, starring Jeremy Sumpter and Jason Isaacs. This is a version I really enjoyed when it came out, but I hadn't seen it in years. When I decided I was going to do a podcast series on Peter Pan, I knew I'd have to cover this one, but I wasn't sure I'd get to it right away. I wasn't even sure if I'd cover it in the first batch. I figured maybe in a year or two, if I did Peter Pan again, I'd get to this one. And I thought I'd mostly finalize my lineup, but I thought I'd ask my friend Conrado Falco if he had any suggestions. I was expecting him to come up with something really obscure, like maybe a foreign film or some kind of art house indie film I'd never heard of, but he actually really wanted to do the 2003 version as he'd grown up with it, so obviously that's what we're going with. So this movie probably took me like 8 hours to watch. I kept falling down rabbit holes when I was like making my notes and going on Wikipedia.
Okay, it wasn't like I remember last time we did Pinocchio, and that was, you know, that took a long time to watch for multiple reasons. I think it's just you notes, but also I think breaks were necessary when enduring that. But hopefully, you had a better time with this.
Yeah, well, this one, I didn't do quite as much research on the book anyway. Because I haven't finished the book yet, so I was just I was going back and forth between the book, like looking certain things up, but like I would look up an actor and then I would fall down a Wikipedia rabbit hole and then I'd find something on the wiki page. Like the two main ones was the indigenous group that the actress who played Tiger Lily was the Haida people, which I'd never heard of, so I was like down that rabbit hole. Uh-huh. And then the movie was dedicated to someone named Dodi Al-Fayed. I think that's how you pronounce it. I'm not sure. Who was the executive producer on Hook. And he apparently was dating Princess Diana at the time that she died. And he was killed with her. Which I didn't know anything about that. So I went down that rabbit hole.
Wow. I did not know that about the dedication of the movie. I had heard that name before. I did know about the Princess Diana thing, but I did not know they were involved, that he was involved with this movie at all.
Well, he wasn't involved.
Well, I guess he wasn't.
He planned to do an adaptation of Peter Pan. He was an executive producer on Hook, and he wanted to do like a full-on Peter Pan adaptation.
So he must have been a huge Peter Pan fan.
He must have been. But then after he died, his father co-produced this movie and then dedicated it to him.
I see. Okay, that makes sense.
So yeah, that was like a long rabbit hole that I went down.
Yeah, I bet.
That seems to always happen, but for some reason I just kept finding more things to fall down with this one.
So you say that you... So what about the book? Because last time when we talked Pinocchio, you had read the book and you had a lot of notes comparing it. And I was looking forward to asking you, how does this compare to the book? Which I have not read, the Peter Pan book.
I've read some of it. I think it is it's a lot closer than the, from what I've read, because I haven't fully finished the book yet. It's a lot closer than like the Disney version. Uh-huh. But they did take some liberties, but I can't like fully comment because I haven't fully finished the book yet.
Okay.
But I can always look something up if you have a specific question, because I've got the book right here with me.
Okay. Well, I was just, because I've only ever seen... I've never read the book. I know there's a play as well that the author wrote around the same time as the book, or I think maybe even before the book.
I think it was around the same time. This Peter Pan started as a chapter in a different book, and then he expanded that into a longer book, and then I think a play, and then I think another book that was based on the... Peter Pan went through a lot of iterations before it became what it is today.
Yeah, I remember from the movie Finding Neverland with Johnny Depp that he does a play of it. So I know that much. And so my most familiar with Peter Pan through the Disney version, I think, like many people. Mm-hmm. So, and watching this, I thought, oh, this has like, there's a lot of like inspiration from the Disney version in here. But I was wondering, is it actually the Disney version or does it come all the way from the book? You know, so that was something that I was... just kind of generally curious about it as I was watching.
Well, if you think of anything specific, you can ask. And if I don't know, I can look it up. I've got the book with me.
Yeah, let's see if anything specific comes up.
Because I had moments like that too. Like you would see something that was familiar and you're wondering what the inspiration was. It probably was the book, because I was kind of surprised at how much, as I'm reading through the book, even though I haven't finished it, I've been surprised at what comes up.
Like what's in the book from the that we are familiar with?
Yeah, things I've seen in different versions is like, oh, that's actually from the book.
That is always interesting, isn't it? When looking at these things. I guess that's what this podcast is all about. So
Yeah. So, what is your familiarity with this movie?
this movie, you told me that you were gonna do Peter Pan next, and if I had any obscure versions of Peter Pan that I wanted to come talk on the show, since I seem to be kind of the obscure movie guy when it comes to these adaptations. But this was the most obscure that I could come up with, but also this was a pretty mainstream release. And when I was about 11 years old, I think is when this movie came out, and it was a big movie with my peer group. I remember I was in South America, so it came out during the summer. It must have been summer of 04. And my cousins, my girl cousins in particular, they were all obsessed with this movie. They watched it constantly. They were obviously in love with the guy who plays Peter Pan, and they, it was like a big deal. And it's a movie that was not a big hit. So after that summer, I just never really heard much of it again, but it always stuck with me because I watched it so many times back then. And then in recent years, I discovered that there was like a group of people who, every now and then would be like, you know what's actually a pretty good movie? That Peter Pan that came out in 2003 and nobody saw. So I was curious to revisit it. And try and I was hoping that I would find like some like hidden masterpiece of my childhood, but it wasn't quite like that, my experience. I enjoyed it. I think it's a pretty good movie, but I don't think it's like anything incredible or something like that. How about you? What was your experience?
Well, I think this movie came out, I think I must have been 17, but I have all younger brothers and we would borrow movies from the library and
Right.
watch them over and over again. And I think that was with this one. And I thought I was like super familiar with this one, but as I was watching it, I was like, have I even seen this? Except once they got to Neverland, I started remembering things. I was like, oh yeah, I remember this. I remember this. I remember this. And the music specifically, the music, I think, is the reason that I thought I was so familiar with this because this came out about the time that I was really getting into soundtracks. And I bought the CD, the soundtrack for this movie, and I listened to the CD a lot. Like James Newton Howard was one of my favorite composers. I mean, he still is.
And I have the feeling that this music, there's a couple of tracks in this that have been used a lot in trailers, I think, in recent
I
years, right?
remember y a few years after that, I was watching a trailer. I don't remember what it was, but I remember watching a trailer. I was like, that's from Peter Pan.
I think maybe because the movie wasn't such a huge hit that people would recognize immediately the music. Because I hadn't seen it in decades, and I watched it and I was like, oh, I know this music, and I did not own the soundtrack, so it must have been used in a lot of trailers or commercials or things like that, maybe even other movies, because I was very familiar that the track when they're flying, I think, to the sky, that was very familiar.
Definitely. That was my favorite song. That's why I recognized it when I don't remember what the trailer was, but I remember watching a trailer for something, and that music started. I was like, they took that from Peter Pan.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they told me that the How to Train Your Dragon folks were using that as temp music, because it reminds me of that score as
Oh,
well.
I wonder.
And it is a flying sequence, so I wonder if they were inspired by that, or they were at least using it as they were kind of like working through the script.
No, different composer, John Powell. I was gonna say, I don't think James Newton Howard did How to Train Your Dragon, but I
No,
could
no.
see. I wonder if that was one that they used in for the trailer. That would make
Oh,
sense.
it could be. Yeah, that would make sense actually. That maybe that's what it is. Maybe it wasn't the trailer. I don't know. I guess we'll have to look at the trailer once we're done recording. Now, I remember that at the time, I remember the trailer for this movie, for Peter Pan, was also pretty ubiquitous, and it featured the song "Clocks" by Coldplay, which was the first time that I had heard that song. Because I was, 11, I didn't know Coldplay at the time, and I kind of got into that song, and obviously my cousins were into the song because it was in the Peter Pan trailer. So that was my introduction to the very famous, universally beloved band Coldplay.
I don't remember the trailer for this movie. I just remember borrowing it from the library.
Yeah, well, I remember the trailer so clearly. I remember that this you know, Coldplay starts playing Clocks, and then it's the sequence where they're all flying out of their bedroom and all of that. Yeah, I think I remember the trailer better than the movie, honestly. Although I just watched the movie, so maybe that's not accurate today.
Yeah, even though I started out feeling like I'd forgotten everything, because all the stuff with the Darling family did not remember. Did not remember anything with the dad. I forgot about the aunt.
Same here.
The only it, I started remembering things when Tinkerbell showed up, because she started making these noises. I was like, I don't remember Tinkerbell making these noises. And then I was like, oh wait,
Right.
maybe I do remember these noises. And
Yeah.
then all of her little pantomiming and making the shapes with her sparkles, that I
Yeah.
definitely remembered.
Tinker, I remember that. I did not remember at all. I was shocked to see that sequence in which the dad's at the bank and there's the whole shenanigans with Wendy and getting some kind of detention at school. And then, you know, I did not remember that section at all. I assumed, like, much like the, you know, Disney version, they were just gonna like start on the night that Peter Pan takes them away, but that was not the case. And I wondered if that was from the book, actually, because I'd never seen that in any other version. So I assumed they made it up.
I don't think anything of that was from the book. There's no aunt in the book.
Oh, that's interesting.
The dad is kind of angry, and he's more like the Disney version.
Yeah.
Like the Disney version, it's not exactly the same, but I almost want to say that the aunt takes on more of the Mr. Darling role, because he's sort of, I don't know, I don't want to say like a milquetoast, but almost, if you know what I mean. Like,
Yeah, in this version, right?
yeah, and he's definitely not in other versions.
Yeah, I remember him being very grumpy from the Disney version, of course, with his mustache and the, you know, the suit that like won't stay put. The and in this version, he is kind of like a bit of a, I mean, he's supposed to be kind, I guess, in order to have that kind of like Captain Hook, you know, the thing that they love to do where Mr. Darling plays Captain Hook, and so to have the contrast with that, I guess. So, but he doesn't make that much of an impression.
I think they normally do that because Captain Hook is almost a metaphor for their father,
Right.
because he's someone that they need to face. And normally their father is the one who is saying that Wendy needs to grow up.
Right. So, and he kind of does here, but it's more like his hand is being forced, right? He's like he has this very bad day, and then he has to. I also assume that the Captain Hook thing is probably comes from the stage and just the fact of like, well, you have this one character who's only at the beginning of the play, and then he goes away, so might as well have the same actor play him because they're not going to interact in the same scene.
Probably. I think that is probably where that came from. But I think it has probably evolved into the Captain Hook being kind of a metaphor for their father.
Definitely. And it's definitely become a tradition. I think that it happens so often now.
It's also a tradition usually that a woman plays Peter Pan, because it's usually more adults in stage
Right.
roles. And I think that this was the very first one that had a young boy play Peter Pan in a live action version. Like, there had been some
Oh.
animated adaptations that had a male voice,
Right,
and
Peter, the Disney version has a kid doing Peter Pan, right? The
yes,
voice.
Bobby Driscoll.
Bobby Driscoll, that's right, of course. Disney star Bobby Driscoll.
Yes. And then there's Hook too, but he was an adult in Hook. I think
Right.
this is the very first one where it was an actual kid boy playing Peter Pan.
That's pretty interesting.
It's the other ones, like, I haven't watched them yet, but I've got a couple lined up to hopefully get to before I finish out this series this time. The Mary Martin one, I know I'm for sure doing. And
That's the
then,
musical, right?
yes, and I would like to do the silent version from the 20s, and I'm pretty sure a woman plays Peter Pan in that
Right.
one too.
Yeah, I have seen parts of that one, but never full. And that looks kind of interesting too. I remember seeing clips of that on TV at some point or another.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet, so whenever I finally get to it, it'll be interesting to see. But either way, I'm sure both of those have a woman playing Peter Pan.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah, I can tell you the silent one does because I've seen clips of it. And Mary Martin, of course, we know is a woman. So,
So, of all these characters, are you familiar with many of the actors?
At the time that I first saw the movie, definitely not. But now I know the actor I'm most familiar with is probably Jason Isaacs, who plays Hook and Mr. Darling. I can't off the top of my head say where I'm most familiar with him from, but I've definitely seen him in tons of movies. And also Olivia Williams, I think, who plays Mrs. Darling, I've also seen in quite a few movies. At the time, though, this was my first exposure to all of these actors. I was pretty young. But yeah, I guess the kids who do Peter and Wendy, they didn't really quite become stars, right? This is one of their few big roles. Am I right in thinking that?
They do still act, but they're not like huge names.
Right.
They were it was kind of weird watching them because I was like, oh, I know Jeremy Sumpter, Rachel Hurd-Wood, of course. They're big stars. I know them. Like, but then I looked up their IMDb page and like, is the only reason that I know them so well from this
Peter
movie?
Pan? I think
Because I
so,
couldn't find
right?
anything else from them that I knew. So it must have just been that I was familiar with their names from knowing this version.
I think I remember the boy, Jeremy Sumpter is his name. I think I remember him being in some show, like a TV show at one point or another, but couldn't tell you what the name of the show was or anything. Was he on Friday Night Lights, maybe? Am I making that up? Am I being crazy?
I think he might have been, but I've never seen that, so that wouldn't have been one I was familiar with.
You know, I think he was. Let me look that up real quick.
That's him.
Yeah. So I think he was pretty good in that. Most everybody in Friday Night Lights is pretty good.
That was a show that I never saw. I know it was a big thing at one point, but I never watched any of it. I was never a big football fan, so a
Yeah. Oh,
show
tell me about
about
it. Neither am
football.
I. I only know football from that show.
A show about football was like not interested at all. Never watched a
Yeah.
single episode.
Yeah. I wasn't either until I heard so many things about it that I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to watch this. And it was a pretty good show. It's very, you know, Kyle Chandler, Connie Britton, they're both pretty great in it. Michael B. Jordan got one of his early roles in that show too.
Well, I know it went on for several years, so it must have been big.
I think it was one of those shows that was very critically acclaimed and had a devoted fan base, but it was never a huge hit. So it was always kind of like the campaign to save Friday Night Lights for one more year or something. I think it lasted like 5 or 6 seasons or something like that. So, you know, it's a good chunk of time.
But a lot of them, when I looked them up, there was a bunch of kids, like this was their only acting role. They never did anything else. The one specifically that stands out was Freddie Popplewell as Michael Darling. When I heard the name, I was like, oh, he obviously went on to be a big thing.
I just
But
made some of the name. That's a movie star's name if I ever saw one. Is that
well, it turns out he got the role kind of by accident.
what you thought?
And it was because his sister, Anna Popplewell, who is a big movie star, she was in the Narnia films. She was auditioning for Wendy, but there was no one to read with her. So she asked her brother to do the read with her, and they liked him and not her.
Oh my God. Can you imagine the dinner conversations at that household around that
That would have been
That must
awkward.
have been awkward. That must have been very stressful for the mom.
Oh, I bet. But then there was also Carson Gray as Tiger Lily. She's the one who
Right.
I went down a rabbit hole because I'd never heard of the Haida people. That's apparently they're from a group of islands in Canada, which was really
Oh.
interesting, which is why I went down the rabbit hole. Like, I've never heard of these islands.
Right. Oh, interesting. I was wondering if they were native actors or if they were just, doing kind of like a brown face situation. But I'm glad to learn that they are actually from this. What was it, Haida people?
And I don't know if like all of the actors were from that group of people. It probably
Right.
was a mix of whoever auditioned.
That makes sense. They're also in the movie for so little, right? Like she's in it for a little bit, but the rest of the Indians are in it for like maybe a scene and that's it.
A scene, basically, yeah. But she, when I looked her up, I read that she could speak Iroquois, so I assumed that that's what she was speaking in the one scene. But then it turns out it was apparently Mohican that she was speaking, so they must have just
Oh, interesting.
given her some lines to learn. And like, not it doesn't really matter, but I was like, if she can speak Iroquois, why not just have her do it in Iroquois?
Yeah, that's interesting.
The rest of us aren't really going to know the difference.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a significance to that. Maybe they just wanted the literary, reference for Last of the Mohicans or something.
But they don't ever say that that's what it is. I just read
Yeah.
online that it was Mohican that she was speaking.
That's interesting. I wonder if it's just, yeah, maybe the director really loves that book or something.
I don't know. Maybe.
Because it seems like a very pretty random thing to do.
Yeah, it
Other than,
does.
I mean, I also wouldn't be surprised if they were like, well, we just put it in like some kind of translation thing and they came up this language. It's all the same, right? Just speak it or something in a kind of insensitive way, which I wouldn't put past people in 2003.
Yeah, I have no idea. I couldn't really find a ton of backstory on a lot of things. Like, I'm sure it's probably on a DVD. That was another thing. I could have sworn I had this on DVD, but I guess we just borrowed it from the library a bunch because I could not find a DVD anywhere. I think I was just
Yeah.
remembering having the CD of the
Not a
soundtrack.
particularly easy movie to watch if you want to.
No, I had, yeah, the only place I could find it was getting an old copy on Amazon. I don't think it's been in print for a long time.
It's definitely not one of those movies that has endured with, like, you know, because kids' movies in particular, if enough kids watch them when they were kids, you know, they kind of have a life of their own later on. But this one, you know, all of my cousins who were obsessed with it, they're not obsessed with it anymore. Or at least I don't hear about it. So it's strange. It kind of disappeared.
I feel like for a while, I was like when Tumblr was a thing, I think it was big on Tumblr. I feel
That
like I
makes
remember people
sense.
sharing GIFs and things on there. But
Yeah.
after Tumblr, well, it didn't die, but like it's not
Right.
popular anymore. After that, I don't think I've kind of never heard anyone talk about it since.
Was lost with Tumblr. Yeah, that sounds right.
Anyways, the one other person that I was going to mention too that only had one acting role was the guy who played Slightly, Theodore Chester. I saw him and was like, I know him. Why do I know him? I don't know why I know him. I think the only th I think it's just because he reminds me of Jake Thomas, who played Martin in AI.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
That's the only thing I can think of is why I thought I recognized him.
He's one of the Lost Boys, right?
Yeah. But I don't know if you'd classify him as the leader, but he's like the closest to a leader besides Peter Pan.
You know what? He did look familiar to me as well. So I'm kind of surprised that he didn't act in anything. I guess he's one of those kids who has one of those faces.
It must be. The only thing I can think of was that he did kind of remind me of Jake Thomas, so.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. I didn't really think of it that way, but we did do AI together here, so it could
Yeah.
be.
But I thought he was a really good actor. Like, he was one of the best of the Lost Boys. Like, all the Lost Boys actually were better than I expected. Because you
Yeah,
kind
but
of
he was pretty
expected.
good. He has a couple of really funny lines.
A lot of times when you get like a big group of kids, it's kind of mixed results as to whether they're going to be great actors or not. I thought all of
Yeah.
these were pretty good.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Yeah, no complaints from with the kids. It is kind of tough. I guess the one thing that I noticed, and maybe this is a way of addressing the performance from the kids, is that the movie had a kind of like a very, I don't want to say frenetic pace, but there was a lot of cutting back and forth in the movie. I noticed as things were happening, and I kind of like quickly in a way that made me think of like, oh, I think maybe they're like cutting around the performances of the kids or trying to keep up the pace for some reason. That's the thing that struck me the most about this movie, watching it now. I was like, am I watching it on fast forward when it first started? I did not
I
remember
kind of
it
had the
having
same thought. I
this
felt like this
pace.
is going so fast.
Yeah.
And like, I felt like, are they trying to make you feel like you're in a dream? Because everything had like this, I don't know, extra hyper real, but also not real at all quality to it. And then everything was happening really fast. You just go from one thing happening to another. And like,
Yeah.
somebody'd go one place and then they'd be another place. And I don't know. It felt odd and maybe disjointed, but I was like, is this on purpose? Like, are they trying to make it feel like it's in a dream? Because sometimes they'll do that with Peter Pan. Like, they'll try and make it sort of like an Alice in Wonderland thing. Like, I'm thinking specifically of Hook because that's the one I've watched most recently. They
Which
really
one,
tried to
Hook?
blur the line at the end to make you think maybe this was all a dream.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting thought. I mean, that's kind of a generous reading of it, I would say. My thinking was that they was just like the studio said this movie cannot be more than 2 hours long, so you better make it move fast, otherwise we're not gonna release it or something.
And that could be it too, because it was for as quickly as it went, even though it took me 8 hours to watch because I was taking so many notes, for as quick as it went, it was long. It was almost 2 hours.
Yeah, so there must have been an even longer cut. And yeah, you don't want this movie to be longer than 2 hours, right? Like that's a lot
It would
for
be a
like
lot for a little kid to sit through.
But I guess this was the time of, Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings were really big in
That's true.
2003. So I
Yeah.
think they were probably thinking, went into it thinking, well, this is like going to be like Harry Potter, right? And then maybe they saw it and they were like, well, we actually don't know if we're going to get that those kinds of numbers, so we need to cut this down.
How well did it do? I don't even remember.
I don't remember off the top of my head. I'd be really curious to know. I would.
Oh, it didn't even make back its budget. It got a good amount. It budget was 130 million and it got 122 million in the box office.
Worldwide or
So
US? Do you know?
it just says box office. It doesn't
Yeah, so it must be,
specify.
it's probably worldwide.
I'm gonna guess so.
Yeah, which isn't great. 130 million though for that time, it's an expensive movie. They
Yeah.
like, they were spending a good amount of money here. And I'm sure they were thinking they were having like a Harry Potter type hit in their hands, or they were, that's what they were trying to go for.
Okay, here's what they say on box office. Peter Pan earned 48 million at the box office in the United States and another 73.5 outside the US, which brings the worldwide total to 122 million.
Yeah, not surprised that it did better outside of the US than in the US. But that is that's pretty bad. 48 on 130 million, that's kind of like a big flop.
It says the film's failure was partly due to its competition with the highly anticipated epic fantasy, The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King, released the week before, and the family comedy, Cheaper by the Dozen, which opened the same day.
Lord of the Rings, I get. Yeah, I mean, I guess. Although this is much more of a kids movie, but that's tough competition. And then Cheaper by the Dozen takes the family audience from you, which is, I mean, I don't know why people were so obsessed with Cheaper by the Dozen at the time and why it was such a big hit, but it was. So.
Yeah, I don't know. That was one I remember everybody talking about the same at the time too. And I'm not even sure I saw it. I remember wanting kind of to see it because Tom Welling was in it and I love Smallville, but it wasn't one that was like the trailers didn't grab me even back then, even loving Tom Welling and a couple other people who were in there. The trailers didn't grab me enough to make me want to watch it.
Definitely a movie that I saw at some point on DVD that, rented it from Blockbuster probably, and I have very little, if any, memories at all of it, so I couldn't tell you what happens in that movie.
I think my family borrowed it from the library once and we never borrowed it again.
Yeah,
Whereas with
there
Peter
you go.
Pan, I think we borrowed it multiple times because I remember watching this several times.
Yeah, me too. Well, I told you already, my cousins were obsessed. I'm pretty sure they had it in a bootleg DVD that they played constantly that summer.
Well, I guess we can get into the story. Like we mentioned before, the whole beginning, I'm pretty sure they made up most of it for this movie, all the stuff with the dad kind of being a wimp, I guess, and Aunt Millicent, like all that stuff, that was not from the book. And it almost made me think, like with Aunt Millicent taking on the role of the person who wants to make Wendy grow up, it's like, I kind of want to see Lynn Redgrave as Captain Hook.
That
I feel like
would be
she would have
good.
been a really, like, a deliciously awful Captain Hook.
That is, yeah, that would be a fun twist on it to have a female Captain Hook. They haven't
Yeah.
done that yet. And actually, the aunt thing, now that you mention it, makes me think of a Harry Potter connection again. If that also feels kind of like something that maybe was
Oh
inspired
yeah,
by that,
he had an awful aunt, didn't he? And an uncle.
And an
But
uncle, but I
yeah.
think the idea of having the parents be good and then introducing a mean aunt might be something that someone
Oh, you know
gave
what? I
inspired
bet
by
you're
that.
right. I bet you're right. Yeah, because otherwise I don't know where this came from. Like, there's no, I don't remember any precedent in the book for anyone like Aunt Millicent. But then you do have a lot of stuff that is from the book, like him losing his shadow in her room. But they added the stuff with it, like the thing with her drawing a picture and then the teacher being infuriated by the picture for some reason, that was not from the book.
Yeah, that felt very tacked on.
Yeah.
And that's the part where the movie really rushes through it that made me feel like, oh, this probably took like 15 minutes in the original cut, and they just like cut it down to get to Peter Pan as soon as possible. Right? Didn't you
Yeah.
get that feeling?
They could have cut a lot of that stuff. It really felt the whole first part felt stretched out, but that was probably because I'm so used to them just getting straight to Peter Pan. And they just had him sort of watching for a while, and then all this stuff happening, and then him finally coming in to find his shadow.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking to me that there was another date. You know, it was like, well,
Yeah.
obviously we're meeting them at night at their house, like we usually do in all of these versions. They're clearly gonna be going away with Peter Pan in a couple of minutes, and then it's like the next day, and I was in complete shock.
That's why I was like, have I even seen this movie? Because I didn't remember any of this stuff.
I didn't remember any of that either.
It was only once we got to Wonderland that I started remembering things.
Yeah. And when we got to Wonderland 2, I started to think, I remember at the time having some thoughts about the movie's visual effects and the way that they, because I was really into visual effects at the time. You know, we had Lord of the Rings, like Spider-Man, Star Wars. There was like a big time for CGI. And in these ones, they had a particular look to them that they weren't so, maybe it's a little bit what you were saying, or feeling it a little bit like a storybook. It didn't feel to me like it was supposed to be super, super realistic, but more of like a fantasy version of things. And I appreciated that at the time. And I have to say, I appreciated it for the most part, rewatching it as well. I think that it's made the effects age a little better than they would if they were trying to go for fully realistic.
Probably when I was watching it, I felt like I had not remembered the effects don't look bad, but in my mind, probably just nostalgia or something. I don't know. I remember this being like so realistic. But then I was watching, I was like, this is like not like a cartoon, but like a live action cartoon, especially like when they go into outer space. I didn't remember that at all. Like I was shocked that that was like, I feel like this would be something I would remember. And I don't remember them going to outer space.
I did remember that part.
I liked the scene, but it was not realistic looking.
No, not at all.
It was kind of like a storybook.
Definitely that part when they get to Neverland, I also remember thinking both of those sections were the ones that stuck to me as a kid, as like being like, this is trying to do something different. It's not trying to just be realistic, you know. It looks like a illustration or something.
That I kept thinking that for certain scenes, it's like especially when they're like in the clouds and the shot over Neverland, I thought this looks like a painting almost.
It did. It did.
And I did notice too at the beginning, I'm fairly certain that the whole shot over London was CGI, even like the people down below and the horses. Like the only part that I was like, when it was like looking in the window, I was like, okay, this looks real. The rest of this, it was very dark, so they were trying to hide it, but I was like, I think this is all CGI.
Yeah, but then there's also so many scenes where the in London where the background is the sky is pink, you know, pink, like a magic hour kind of like thing that you're like, oh, this is not a real background, you know? So like even from that section of the movie, they were already kind of setting the template for the kind of otherworldly illustration storybook feel.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it was shot on sound stages, so it probably was the stuff that, like in London, because I think it was shot in Australia, so they weren't in London.
Yeah, that makes sense because the director is Australian, right? BJ Hogan.
Maybe the reason that I know it was Australian is because when I was looking up all the actors, I started looking up the pirates. And I was like, Australia, Australia, New Zealand, New Zealand, Australia, New Zealand. It's like, did they shoot this in Australia? Yes, Queensland.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure PJ Hogan is Australian. He I think broke through with that movie Muriel's Wedding with Toni Collette.
Yeah, I just looked him up. He is.
And then he did My Best Friend's Wedding with Julia Roberts, which is a great movie.
But yeah, a lot of it was shot. If they shot anything on location, it would have been in Australia, but a lot of it was sound stages, which makes sense because I could tell that it was green screened for adding in effects later.
And it's probably for the better. I think a lot of the sets are pretty cool. The sort of castle dungeon where they have the when you know where Hook takes Tiger Lily and the brothers when he kidnaps them, and then they have the fight in the middle of the movie. That's a pretty cool set, I think. And the pirate ship is also pretty cool.
Yeah, I had not remembered that the pirate, well, the pirate ship, I guess it's not because of the pirate ship, but like the beginning when they're like the whole ocean is frozen. I did not, I don't think it was from the book that Peter Pan controls the weather, but not like he does it on purpose, but like the movie pretty much says that the weather is based on his either presence or well-being. Which I did not remember at all. I don't think that was from the book. I've not seen that in any other version. I feel like they must have made it up for this, unless there was a line in the book that they decided to expand upon.
Yeah, I guess it could be that. But yeah, I've never seen it in any other version either. And in the movie, they don't make too much of a big deal about that. I guess it's not really fully explained. It just kind of happens.
Yeah, it really didn't come into play except for the beginning when the thaw starts happening and he's like, this shouldn't be happening until 3 p.m.
Yeah.
He says spring's not due till 3 p.m. And then at the end when they think he died and everything starts going dark and stormy, and then when
Right.
he like is revived and then there's like the, I don't know, pink nebula explosion, whatever happens.
Right.
I should say too, though, before we get too far into Neverland, before they get to Neverland, I loved the scene where the kids are have just woken up, and Wendy's like trying to get him to take the brothers with them, and he talks about making them fly, and John says, "You offend reason, sir," and Peter
Yeah.
just like stares at him and starts floating up, and he says, "I should like to offend it with you."
Yeah, that
I
was
love
pretty
that
fun.
line.
That's a pretty funny line. And also the face that Peter makes when Wendy tells him to take them with them, and he makes the face of like, I don't really want to, but I guess since they're your brothers, I'll take them. I thought that was a pretty funny performance moment.
Yeah, that's a thing that I liked about this one. Like, it's pretty much most versions have it that he wants Wendy and he doesn't really care about the brothers at all.
Yeah.
But I liked his, I feel like his was more nuanced in that way. And he was also less, for lack of a better term, completely narcissistic. Because
Yeah.
that was the thing that struck me the most about watching the Disney version of Peter Pan. I was like, I don't like this kid at all. He is he's like a little narcissist. He's awful.
Yeah, he is pretty annoying when you think about it.
But with this one, he's still cocky, but not to a terrible degree. He's a little bit full of himself, but in a weirdly amusing, slightly charming kind of way, which is why I think so many people must have gotten crushes on him at the time.
Yeah.
Another thing that I really liked, completely random, there's a parrot in this movie who is hideous. He looks like a
Yeah.
zombie parrot. But
He does.
I loved the scene where Smee is asleep and it sort of peeks into the frame and screams and Smee starts shooting at it.
I do like that parrot. I think he's a pretty cool character, and it's like a good design, you know.
It's a hideous little thing.
I think CGI in some shots and maybe like a puppet in others, but it's a good effect. I like the character.
Yeah, I think it was an animatronic item. I'm not sure if it was 100% animatronic because it could have been, especially the one where it's like walking across the deck, that might have
Yeah.
been CGI. But like, especially for the scene when it's like peeking into the shot and screaming in Smee's ear, that was animatronic.
Yeah, they did a good job on that. And it's a cool design too, because you're right. It's a hideous parrot that like is missing a leg, and it has like a pirate vibe to him. I thought it was pretty cool.
It looked like something that should have been in the Pirates of the Caribbean series.
Yeah, I thought of that immediately.
Like this little zombie monkey. It
Yeah,
reminded me of
exactly.
that.
I wonder if they. No, I guess it would be too little. The movies came out the same year, so I doubt they got inspiration from Pirates of the Caribbean for that character, but it could have
Just
been.
parallel thinking, I guess. That happens sometimes.
Yeah.
And I also really liked the scene where the Lost Boys shoot Wendy down and they gather around her. That's no bird, that's a lady. And Toodles has killed her. I liked the kid who played Toodles too, when he like opens up his shirt and tells Peter Pan to stab him.
Yeah, to kill him. Yeah, that's
Which is
funny.
actually from the book. I think he almost said line for line what the book said
Oh,
about
that's
like
cool.
true Peter. And then I also like the scene where they want to carry her to safety, but they realize they all have dirty hands. So Slightly says, "She must stay here and die." And Peter looks
Yeah.
at him, "No! Oh, how could I have thought that? No, stupid. Sorry." I really liked Slightly. I can't believe he only did one movie.
Yeah,
He
that's
was a
a.
great little kid.
Yeah, that in that scene, he's very particularly funny in that scene, I thought.
Yeah, it just his timing and delivery was great. And then, of course, Tinkerbell was behind that. And I love the scene where she admits it by changing into a little devil.
Yeah, what did you think of this Tinkerbell?
Like, I like the nasty Tinkerbell. Like, Tinkerbell has kind of been sanitized, especially with her recent direct to video. Well, not direct to video, the series that Disney did. Because I've just recorded an episode on that, or it'll probably turn into three episodes. I think we talked for 3 hours about that series, but there's like six movies. And Tinkerbell is, she's just a nice character in those movies. But I like the nasty Tinkerbell.
Well, she isn't. She is nasty in the original Disney version, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's weird to see how she has changed. Like, there's really no explanation for why she's so nice in the series that they gave her in the 2000s.
Yeah, I think it's brand management is the only
Yeah,
explanation.
pretty much. Yeah. And then with the Lost Boys, after they've gotten Wendy back to their hideout, they basically have made her their mother, and Peter is taking on the role of their father and talking about, well, first he says he needs to spank them, but then he just wants to kill them all. And Wendy doesn't want him to, so she says, kill them and they shall think themselves important. And then the kids are all piping up, so important and unique. And then she says that they should give them medicine instead. And then they start screaming, kill us, please. I really love the kids.
Yeah, I think that's one of the movie's strengths is how it portrays the kids and how it has that kind of like playful kid energy to it without being annoying about it. You know, like, because I don't know how you feel about the movie Hook, but that movie lays it on a little too thick with the kids and their like skateboards and all the things they do, which, you know, I think they overplay their hand. Whereas this movie, I think, finds a very nice balance in between letting the kids have fun, but not being too on the nose about it.
I think I probably like Hook a little better, but that's probably because of nostalgia, because I watched that a lot growing up. And this one I do really like too. And I think, in at least as far as the kids go, this does them better. Other than Rufio. Like, I love Rufio. He's the best lost boy. So they can't beat Rufio. But of all the random kids that are in the background, this movie has them beat. I really like the Lost Boys in this. And then I also really like the scene. The first one that I fully remembered, it was like, I 100% remember this, was when the pirates are capturing Tiger Lily and she's yelling at them in her language. And Captain Hook looks to Smee to translate because they've asked her where the boys are. And she yells at them and spits on Captain Hook's shoe. And Smee says, she says, sorry, but no. Just his delivery after her long diatribe and then spitting, sorry, but no. As soon as that happened, I was like, I 100% remember this. That was great. I feel like we might have quoted that as my brothers. I think that might have been one of the lines that was quoted a lot. And then, yeah, the scene there, everybody's taken back to the Black Castle, and then the big battle, that all was done really well, especially like the fighting and flying. Like, they did the effects that they did, or the stunts, because it wasn't all effects. Of the kids on wires fighting the pirates was so good.
That whole section with the castle is pretty great. And the crocodile, I think they did a pretty good job there too. And also in the design of it, making him feel again kind of storybooky and not super realistic. It's this very big, kind of like rotund crocodile, you know, that looks kind of like not like a real one, but more like a like a cartoon version or an illustration of a crocodile,
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely CGI, and I think that leans more towards the illustration feel. Like, I don't know that I would, maybe it would be sort of cartoony. Well, especially the scene where the boys are like next to it and its eye opens up. I didn't feel cartoon while I was watching the
Maybe cartoon is
crocodile.
too much of an exaggeration, but I just feel like he doesn't look like a real crocodile in its design. You know, it's designed like a different,
Yeah.
more fantasy-like creature.
And which works for this, because I think if they had tried to make it realistic, it would look painfully CGI. I think if
Definitely.
they're leaning into the illustration feel with a lot of things, and they probably decided to go more in that route with the crocodile, because a lot of the effects don't look real, unless it's like the wire work with the kids.
Exactly, and I think that is the right choice with the croc, especially with the crocodile. I think he looks pretty cool because of that, and it's memorable.
Oh, and one other thing that I liked in this scene before the fighting all starts happening, when the kids are getting chained to the rock, and John says, "We are English gentlemen, do not beg." And then Michael starts screaming, "Please don't kill us!" And Tiger Lily rolls her eyes. Then they chain them all to the rock with the teddy bear. I love that they include the teddy bear because that kind of happened in the Disney version too, and I thought that was great when, because like in the Disney version, the Indians tie the teddy bear up to a little stake,
Right, that's right.
and then later when Smee gets tricked into setting them free, and he says, "And take your cat with you," and he tosses the teddy bear, and then also in the whole melee, the bear gets beheaded, and then you have the scene back with Tiger Lily's tribe, and then there's this older lady sewing something, and Peter Pan had been injured, like stabbed by Captain Hook's hook, and I assumed, because I'd forgotten this, I assumed that she was sewing him up, and they're talking about a wounded warrior, and then she holds up the teddy bear. She was fixing the teddy
Yeah, that's funny. What did you make of Captain Hook, this version of Captain Hook? Because like I was surprised to realize that he's kind of like hot Captain Hook a little bit. He's like introduced with his shirt on, and he's like he's so sulking and a little sultry. I enjoyed the performance, but I was a little bit surprised to revisit and see that that's kind of the take they were going for.
I guess I didn't think of him as hot, but I think it was partly because I was taken aback by his stump being very visible in the scene with
Oh,
his
that's right.
shirt
In
off.
the first,
I think I must have been too focused on that. It didn't, I guess some people probably would find that kind of hot. It didn't strike me as that, but yeah, that I do remember that scene. I could see that. But yeah, that I forgot to mention that the him without the arm and without any covering, I don't remember seeing that in another version yet.
No, that definitely feels like something they were trying to show off with the ability of doing it with CG in 2003. You know, it would have been harder to do before in that realistic way.
And they did it well because I mean he doesn't have a missing hand in real life, so that was CGI and they made it look real. And then after that, you've got the scene where Peter and Wendy are watching the fairies, and then they're dancing in the forest with Hook and Tinkerbell watching them. And then they decide to team up to kidnap Wendy. And Wendy accidentally offends Peter by suggesting, sort of, that he should grow up. And he threatens to have her banished and flies away. And then Wendy gets kidnapped by the pirates. And I loved when she goes down and sits at the table, and Smee comes up, "Muscat, miss? But I'm a little girl. Rum then." And then Captain Hook is talking to her, and he pops in again, "Cigar." After I got, like, once when I started watching this, I felt like Smee and Captain Hook were off somehow. But I think I was just, I think I was, must have been confusing Hook and this movie in my head, and my memories were getting mixed because I hadn't seen them both in so long. I think I was just expecting Dustin Hoffman and Bob Hoskins. And once I got over that, I really liked this me, especially this scene.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty yeah, I think it's pretty good that this me. Yeah, and this is a good scene as well. I agree with you.
Then you got the pirates trying to convince Wendy to join them. And she seems to consider it, but she's asking for time to think about it. And she wonders what her mother would think, and then realizes she's starting to forget her parents. And her brothers, when she goes back, think that she and Peter Pan are their parents. So then she's like, "We got to get out of here."
Right, which I think is not something I've seen in any other version either. Or am I wrong?
Well, it sort of is in the Disney version. It's not exactly the same. And I'm going to look it up and see how exactly it plays out in the book, because I think
Maybe I'm totally misremembering.
there's a lot of things about memory in the book. Because the kids, like the Lost Boys and Peter Pan, and like at the beginning too, in this movie, when Peter Pan seems to forget John, like, "Who are you?" Like that is not exactly the way it plays out in the book, but he does forget them at times. There's a lot of things about memory and forgetting people back in the real world.
Right. That makes sense because the kids, they're all the Lost Boys and Peter Pan, they don't seem to want to go back to the real world or have any families there or anyone they really care about. So I
Yeah.
guess that makes sense based on that.
Okay, so Wendy was forgetting her parents and she decides to go home. So, yeah, that is from the book.
Okay. That does make sense, I guess. So how does it happen in the Disney version? Do you remember that?
I don't remember the exact lines, but she sings the song Your Mother and Mine to remind her brothers of their mother. Because I
Oh,
think they
that's
were
right. So
forgetting.
it must happen there as well. It's been so long since I've seen it that, obviously I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, the memory thing is a big part of the book. Like, there's something about Neverland that makes you forget the real world.
That sounds like something that would happen in a place like that, right? That makes a
Yeah.
lot of sense story-wise.
Yeah. Also in here you have the scene with Tinkerbell captured, trapped in the glass case. The way she gets out in this version is that she provokes the zombie parrot thing into coming after her. And the way it like came after her and opened the case was like, is this a Jurassic Park reference?
Yeah, I guess so, right?
The way it's like looking around the door at her. But yeah, that's happening about the same time that they're deciding to go home, and Wendy leaves Peter a cup of medicine to drink, and Tinkerbell figures out what's going on. Hook has decided to poison this medicine, so she goes and drinks it and is dying.
Right, has a redemption moment.
Yeah. This scene, I think, is the part, like, there's something similar happens in the book, but I think in the play version, they have this audience participation thing where everybody has to like
Right,
chant
I
and
believe in
clap.
fairies, yeah.
Yes. And they sort of do a weird thing in this version where he's like telepathically communicating with the entire world or something. And like people all around the world start saying that they believe in fairies that brings her back to life. It doesn't really make sense, but it's fine. This is a fairy tale, basically. So.
That is very, I don't know if you ever watched the Dragon Ball Z, that show, but that's very much something they would do in that show. There was a moment where he has to do like this incredibly, energy draining power move, but he needs to all the people in the world to raise their hands to give him power so he can pull it off or something. So when I
Really?
was a kid, yeah, I was a huge Dragon Ball Z kid, and so this section reminded me of that at the time.
Interesting. I've never seen Dragon Ball Z. I know what it is because it's such a huge part of pop culture, but it was never on, like, we didn't have cable growing up, so if it
Right.
didn't play on network TV, I didn't see it.
Right.
So I know what it is, but I didn't know the plot, and I didn't know that anything like that happened. That's interesting.
Yeah, that was huge when I was a kid. We did have that on network in South America. So that's why everybody I knew was obsessed with it and watched it all the time because it was on all the time.
Okay. Yeah, she's revived and they go back to fight Captain Hook. And then I don't think that this is in any other version, but Hook grabs Tinkerbell and uses her to gain the ability to fly. And then they have a duel in the sky, basically, which I thought was really interesting. They actually do sort of something similar in one of the Tinkerbell movies,
Oh, really?
there's a whole movie about. Captain Hook is in one of the movies. Like, it's a prequel, so
Oh.
he's like a young man. And there's the whole thing about him trying to get enough fairy dust to make his ship fly so that he can go back to the real world and rob all the museums and everything in the world. And then, like,
Oh,
the movies are all weird, but there's one scene where he's like flying around and battling while flying. So I don't know if they got that idea from this movie or not, because that would have come probably like a decade after this.
right.
Yeah, other than that, I don't think I've seen another version where Peter Pan and Captain Hook are like fighting in the sky.
That also seems like another CG is a new thing that we can impress with kind of a thing. It feels very of the time where CG effects were still kind of impressive on their own if you were doing something that hadn't been done before.
Some of it probably was, but they did a lot of wire work in this movie. Like, they actually had them hoisted up, flying around.
You know what? Actually, I think might be the inspiration for this is Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I didn't think of that, but that came out a couple of years before, and that was a huge thing with the flying martial arts. So I wonder if that was the inspiration there.
I could have been. That would be an interesting place to get inspiration for a Peter Pan movie, but
Well, it's a fairy tale of a
yeah.
sort as well.
Yeah. But then one interesting thing that they also did was that Captain Hook sort of beats Peter Pan, sort of like using psychological manipulation, which I don't think any other version has done, at least that I've seen so far, with him telling him that Wendy is going to abandon him and go home and grow up and marry someone and he'll be alone. And then he basically succumbs to this, I don't know, depression.
Yeah, he is very psychological, Captain Hook, and because in the scene at the castle, he also gets him to reveal himself by kind of like doing this thing of like asking him where he is, and he asks him if he's a man, and then Peter Pan is like, "No, I'm not a man. Are you a boy?" And that, and by keeping him talking, he's able to determine where he is and sneak up on him.
Yeah.
So the movie definitely paints him as a kind of like a conniving villain who's using smarts to get what he wants.
Which is kind of, it's probably closer to the book in that respect. I've seen so many Disney stuff recently, because that's like the bulk of the Peter Pan stuff I've been working on. So I'm used to Captain Hook being basically a Looney Tunes character. He's not exactly threatening. But he can be at times, but like the pirates are basically Looney Tunes in the Disney version. And that carries on to like the sequel and especially like the spin-off Jake and the Neverland Pirates. It's all they're cartoons. So this one is probably closer to the book in making him an actual threat. And this one probably goes the furthest in making him like, well, I guess Hook does a little bit too. Just like really trying to get into Peter's head. But then you have the scene with him basically defeated and Wendy pretending that she's going to give him a thimble, which they had previously swapped to the words thimble and kiss. So she gives him a kiss and he starts glowing pink and like basically explodes with magic. Which again, this is where I was really thinking, like, are they just going for this is a dream sequence almost? Because like the sky was like doing a whole Aurora Borealis nebula thing, and he was ex like his explosion of pink sparkles or whatever blasted all the pirates off the ship. Like the kids like knew what was going to happen, and they all like crouched down and hid so they wouldn't get blasted off the ship. It was strange, but it worked for a fairy tale. And then you've got Captain Hook finally being eaten by the crocodile. And that was another scene where I remembered, like, oh, I remember this. The kids chanting as he's like trying to fly and scrambling to stay above the crocodile and then finally giving up and dropping into the crocodile's mouth.
Yeah, in a pretty striking scene, which, or shot rather, that I didn't remember that I remembered until it happened. I was like, oh, I remember this so well.
That's a good way of putting how I felt a lot about a lot of this. I didn't remember
Yeah,
that
exactly.
I remembered. And then another thing that added to the whole dreamlike feel with Peter whistling and all the fairies flying out of the forest to carry the pirate ship back to London. Is that when that happened, I was like, so did the fairies like know what this particular whistle meant and it meant to come and carry us to London? That was another thing. It was like, this really does not make sense, but it's a fairy tale, so I'll go with it. So they get back to London, they're reunited with their parents, and then the Lost Boys show up, which is not from the book, and they apparently adopt them all.
Yeah, which seems like a very 101 Dalmatians thing to happen
It
at the end.
does. I didn't even think of that, but you're right. The only exception would have been Slightly, who shows up late and says he got lost. And then I didn't really know what they were doing here because he's talking to Aunt Millicent and Tinkerbell like zaps her with her pixie dust. And then Aunt Millicent just declares that he's her son. Like she knows his name and everything. And it's like she's not saying that she'll adopt him like the others are being adopted. She declares that he's her son. It's like, okay, is he really her son, or is this an effect of Tinkerbell.
I think the implication is supposed to be that it is her real son and Tinkerbell somehow can make her remember. But it is kind of a little out of nowhere.
Yeah, I was confused. I mean, again, it's a fairy tale, so I can more easily accept it in a movie like this than something more serious, but I wish there would have been like a little bit more explanation for that.
Yeah, or it wasn't really necessary, in my opinion. You could have just not done it, you know?
Yeah, no. I mean, she could have adopted a kid, just had one of them show up, and she's like, oh, I need a son. I'll take one. But yeah, that's pretty much the end. You have Peter promising Wendy that he'll never forget her and he'll come back to visit for stories. And then he goes back to Neverland. But then I didn't mention there's been a narrator through a lot of this, which I hadn't remembered at all. But then the narrator reveals herself to be Wendy grown up and says that she never saw Peter again after that. But she continues to tell his story to her children who tell theirs. And the story is passed down through the generations.
It is the movie that, because that makes me think of the ending of Edward Scissorhands. So this movie does feel to me very much like it is inspired by all these other movies that came before. And it's kind of like taking a little bit of influence from all these other kind of fairy tale like movies that have come in the years prior. You know, you have your little bit of Harry Potter here and there, your little bit of Edward Scissorhands. There was another movie that I mentioned before that I can't remember what it was, but you know, so that's kind of the vibe that I got from it this time around.
How did Edward Scissorhands end? I haven't seen that in years. I don't remember much of it at all.
Yeah, I actually watched it pretty recently again. It ends with Winona Ryder it begins and ends with the same thing. She's older and she's looking at the window at the snow and talking about, you know, she tells her grandkids the story of Edward Scissorhands. And at the end, she says like, never saw him again. But, you know, every time it snows, I think of him. And the movie kind of cuts to Edward doing the ice sculptures in the mansion and stuff. So it has that kind of melancholy, we never saw each other again, but I remember him very fondly kind of feeling to it.
Okay.
It made me think a lot of that, especially probably because I watched the movie recently, Edward Scissorhands.
Well, that ending is not the ending that they were originally going to go with, because it's different from the book. In the book, he comes back when she has grown up and he takes her daughter to Neverland.
Which we all know from the Disney sequel,
yeah,
Return to Neverland.
I was surprised to learn that that was actually based on the book, like very loosely. Like that, they made up most of that movie, but the basic premise was actually from the book. So the whole thing about her never seeing him again was not from the book, and they actually shot a scene of her as an adult meeting him again when she has a daughter, but they didn't use it.
That seems a little bit creepy. That he comes and takes his daughter, right? Like, if just to end the movie that way?
I suppose that depending on how you do it, it could be creepy.
I think just ending this movie with that would not have worked. I think they probably made the right choice by getting rid of that. Because that, I think, would have come off as a little bit creepy.
I could see that, yeah. And I don't remember, like, I think that was included as an extra on the DVD, but I didn't watch the extras.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly how it would have come off, or if even like, because sometimes they'll shoot multiple versions of things and I don't know what was included or if that was included, because I need to actually look that up. But I read on Wikipedia about the scene that they cut. But yeah, in the book, there's a whole chapter of her as an adult and he comes back and they have a conversation.
Wow.
But they did... Before, because that chapter actually was added later. The first publishing did not have that chapter. And the original ending was probably pretty melancholy in that he was watching the family that he could never have. And they, like the way that the adult Wendy narrates that is almost word for word about the family or something. Let me find the passage in the book so that I say it correctly, because the line, I remember the way she said it. I looked it up. It was pretty much exactly the line. He was looking through the window at the one joy from which he must forever be barred. That was the
Oh,
way,
wow.
That was the line the book originally ended with. And then he
Which
wrote
is
a final chapter.
Pretty sad.
Yeah. So I guess they went with a more melancholy version, the original ending to the book. Oh, wait a minute. The Darlings do adopt the Lost Boys.
Oh wow, in the original book.
In the chapter that he added on, the When Wendy Grew Up chapter.
Oh, interesting.
Like I said, I hadn't fully finished the book, so that is part of the book. I'm shocked.
That is interesting. Wow, so that is in the chapter that is not in this version of the movie, but it is in the book.
Yeah.
This is major news to everybody.
Apparently.
I had no idea about this.
Okay, I'm looking it up on Wikipedia, and it says 4 years after the premiere of the original production of Peter Pan, Barry wrote an additional scene entitled When Wendy Grew Up, an afterthought, later included in the final chapter of Peter and Wendy, and later still published as a separate work in 1957. In this scene, Peter returns for Wendy years later, but she's now grown up with a daughter of her own named Jane. It's also revealed that Wendy married one of the Lost Boys, although this is not mentioned in the novel and is never revealed which one she married. In the original draft of the play, it's mentioned that she married Toodles, although Barry omitted this before publication. When Peter learns that Wendy has betrayed him by growing up, he is heartbroken until Jane agrees to come to Neverland as Peter's new mother. In the novel's last few sentences, Barry mentions that Jane has grown up as well, and Peter now takes her daughter, Margaret, to Neverland. Barry says the cycle will go on forever as long as children are gay and innocent and heartless, which I feel like
Wow.
heartless must be one of those words that has changed meaning because that does not sound correct right now.
Neither does gay.
Well, I know, but like the word gay has changed meaning from back then, but I feel like heartless must have as well, because as long as
That
children
sounds
are
right.
gay and innocent and heartless. I wonder what it originally meant, because that feels kind of terrible right
Must
now.
mean the opposite of
It
heartless,
must
right?
mean, yeah. Okay, reading more on Wikipedia. The scene that they moved further up in the movie with him trying ho to bar the window back home so that Wendy can't go home, that was from towards the end of the book. Says before Wendy and her brothers arrive at the house, Peter flies ahead to try and bar the window so Wendy will think that her mother has forgotten her. But when he learns of Mrs. Darling's distress, he bitterly leaves the window open and flies away. The Darlings happily reunite with their parents. Wendy then presents all the Lost Boys to her parents, who decide to adopt them all. Peter returns briefly and he meets Mrs. Darling. She offers to adopt Peter as well, but Peter refuses, afraid that they will catch him and make him a man. It is hinted that Mary Darling knew Peter when she was a girl. She is described as always having a kiss in the corner of her mouth that no one could reach, but Peter takes it with him as he leaves.
Interesting.
Peter promises to return for Wendy and to take her to the Neverland for a week every spring. The final scene of the play takes place a year later when we see Wendy prepping to go back home after the spring cleaning has taken place. It is stated that Tinkerbell has died during the year since fairies are naturally short-lived creatures. However, Peter has already forgotten about Tinkerbell, the Lost Boys, and even Hook when Wendy returns, and he does not understand Wendy's wistful wish that she could take him back with her. According to the narrator of the play, it has something to do with the riddle of his being. If he could get the hang of the thing, his cry might become, to live would be an awfully big adventure.
That's interesting and also kind of like sad in a Victorian kind of way. So I guess it kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Now I need to actually sit down and fully finish reading this book. I'm surprised. I just assumed that they made up the whole ending with the Lost Boys being adopted by the Darlings. I'm kind of shocked that that actually came from the book, because that's not a thing that usually happens, at least in the versions that I've seen so
No.
far.
Yeah, I had never seen that either, except for in this version.
Yeah. Interesting. So I guess that is the end of the 2003 version.
A pretty successful version, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Maybe not the best ever, although I haven't seen that many, so, but I think it's a pretty successful one. Like I said, I can't help but feel a little bit of disappointment just because I really wanted to love it. I remembered it being an important part of my childhood, and I remember thinking it was pretty good at the time. And but it, that's kind of how it goes when you revisit some of those movies, right? I recently watched Matilda again, the Danny DeVito version, which I thought was still great. I think it's like it still holds up and it's so good. And I was hoping to have a similar experience with this. It didn't quite reach that level, but I would say it's still a pretty good family movie that, should probably be recognized more than it is.
Of all of the versions that I've seen so far that are like straight adaptations of Peter Pan, this is my favorite. I think as a movie, I like Hook better, but that's because I grew up with Hook. Like that was, I think I watched Hook more than any other version of Peter Pan when I was a kid. I vaguely remember watching the animated version a couple times, but it wasn't like a favorite. We probably borrowed it from the library a couple times growing up, but I think we borrowed Hook multiple times. We might have even had it taped off the TV, and we watched that a lot. So that's the reason that that one has stuck with me so many years.
That makes sense.
But as a straight adaptation, I think this is my favorite.
Yeah, like I said, I haven't seen a lot, but this is a pretty good one.
Yeah, and I haven't seen too much yet. Like I said, most of the ones that I've been watching are all related to Disney so far.
That's true. There aren't that many other versions, right? Other like that are straight adaptations, like you're saying.
There are more than you probably think. A lot of them are obscure. A lot of them were released and then they kind of bombed and then faded into obscurity. There were a couple in the last decade that I think came out and then nobody saw and then they disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense when you have something that is kind of in the public domain, but like of really big movies, recently it's really been like prequels and things like that, right? Like that movie Pan, and I know there was a play that was actually pretty good. There was also a prequel called Peter and the Starcatcher that I saw. That was a very funny play. And I thought they were gonna make it into a movie, but then it kind of fizzled out.
I recognize the title. I think I thought that was a book. Maybe,
It
or
was a
maybe it
book.
is.
Yeah, it was a book that was turned into a play that was on Broadway. It was a very fun play, and then I heard that they were gonna make a movie about it, but then they didn't.
Well, the most recent one, of course, was Peter and Wendy from Disney Plus last year. And this is way better than that one. Like that one wasn't awful, but it wasn't, I think I went into that with too high of hopes because I really liked it. Was the same filmmaker that had done Pete's Dragon, the remake of Pete's Dragon, and I really liked Pete's Dragon.
That Pete's Dragon is a pretty good movie.
I think I was expecting another hidden gem or whatever, and it was just like not that it was bad or anything, but it was just
It was just okay.
kind of a by the numbers remake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, anyways, with the 2003 one, of all the ones I've seen so far, this is my favorite. I really like this version. I think there are things it could have done better, but I don't know. I just the different choices they made, the actors they got, the two main, especially Jeremy Sumpter, I think was great as Peter Pan. I think especially because of the fact that he wasn't, I've just gotten so used to Peter Pan being kind of an awful narcissistic character. And the fact that he was just kind of cocky and a little bit full of himself, but in a charming way, I think that really made him stand out. Yeah, I guess that will be all for this episode. I'm sure you'll be back for something else in the future.
I definitely will. I love coming on the show and talking about these adaptations with you. So, yeah, I'm sure I'll be back for something. Maybe something a little more obscure next time, or something more marginally related, like when we did AI for Pinocchio. But that worked out fine. I think we had a good episode out of that, right?
Yeah, that was probably one of my favorites of, well, I mean, that was a bunch that I really liked. But with the Pinocchio ones, I really enjoyed making the episodes, most of them more than watching the movies. That one in particular, there was a few others that were like kind of bad, but I enjoyed talking about them afterwards.
Yeah, that Pinocchio movie we watched was really rough.
Well, until the next time, do you want to let people know where they can find you if they want more from you?
Yeah, of course. The best place to find my sort of like movie writing is on Letterboxd. If you are on that, that's a social media for movies, and you can search my name, Conrado Falco the Third, on there. And you can also listen to me on the Criterion Project podcast, where me and Rachel Wagner, film critic Rachel Wagner, talk about movies in the Criterion Channel or collections. So yeah, check that out.
Okay, well, until next time.
See you next time. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Every Version Ever. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and follow my co-hosts as well. My link tree and all of our links will be in the description below. If you want more of my content, all my podcasts are available on YouTube as well as most podcast platforms. If you enjoyed this show, check out one of the other podcasts or check out my Patreon for bonus and extended episodes you won't find anywhere else. We'll be back soon with another brand new episode, so thanks for listening and we'll see you next time.